This is Radio Maria, and welcome to Pro Parent with Ciro Candia.
Hello, and welcome to Pro Parent, the program that promotes confident parenting with me, Ciro Candia. My mission? To provide parents with the tools and encouragement to become the best mothers and fathers God is calling them to be, fostering homes where children grow in character and virtue. For my birthday, even when I was into my 40s, my dad, whose handwriting and spelling were a family joke, used to write cards with messages like, "Dear Ciro, I'm so very proud of you and all your accomplishments. I love you, Dad." Many years later, these cards are still incredibly moving to read. But what has always moved me aren't his words. It's seeing his handwriting. 5 years ago, my dad died of Alzheimer's, and for the last few years, he couldn't even write his own name. But those birthday cards with those imperfect scrawls are a treasure I wouldn't trade for anything. And I'm so glad that what he left me weren't just emails or text messages. The importance of handwriting. Now, handwriting is so deeply personal. Now, words on a computer screen can never have the same impact. We all need handwritten notes from time to time. We need letters to remind us that deeper communication really exists than what can be found through emails or smartphone text messages. So many people nowadays don't understand the value of paper and pen, or the texture of a note card, or the heartfelt words of a father sharing his wisdom on paper. But they should. So that's my first message for today. Write to your spouse or to your kids or family members from time to time using paper and pen. As I've said many times on these shows, you know, I'm not anti-tech, and obviously electronic media is here to stay. And if it wasn't for these platforms, it would be impossible to communicate with you. I recognise how much easier our laptops and tablets and other devices have made areas of work life easier. Even for leisure, I think a Kindle is a great way for storing and reading countless books. And the reality is that most of us have formed bonds with these machines, e-relationships, we could say. We love them, or sometimes we hate them, but while they've made areas of our lives more organized and efficient, these devices, as I've been exploring in the past few shows, have also created many problems too. Last week, I touched upon the statistics that show that millions of children in the UK are trapped in the grip of smartphone addiction. And this alarming trend, in my view, is directly contributing to the escalating mental health crisis among our teenagers, with more and more needing professional support. And I backed up this view with work from people like Jonathan Haidt, who's been in the press recently. And another big concern I have with smartphone addiction is the impact on young people's spiritual well-being, that quiet place where they can connect with something larger than themselves. Interestingly, Jonathan Haidt, who is not a Christian, I believe, in an interview, seemed to argue that religion does seem to offer some protection from all these digital harms. You know, he quotes a study from Michigan University that found that secular girls apparently are worst affected by the digital use, but religious boys the least. And he makes the point that the collapse in mental health might also be linked to the decline in religious life across Europe. And as girls are not so protected by faith, you know, that smartphone effect, and Instagram in particular, is so acute. And can any of us be surprised by this? This endless distraction makes it difficult to connect with something, as I say, larger than themselves, which is why so many young people I come across claim to have no religion. I've mentioned before in the past that for many of these young people, the new no religion preaches that the God understood by countless generations is at best stifling, at worst cruel, but either way he's obsolete. Or for some, that God is just one of us, basically a big powerful teenager in the sky who goes around validating everyone's feelings and who offers no objective truth. Truth is what we make of it. Everything is right, provided I feel it to be so. And as I mentioned in the past, this is just another form of atheism. And the result is that God is no longer present in society, in our schools and in our homes. But as G.K. Chesterton famously said, you know, when people lose their faith in God, they won't believe in nothing. They'll believe in anything. This void left by God's absence must be filled with something. Drugs, sex, smartphone addiction, etc. But how are we to keep up? Many parents ask. You know, the task of constantly safeguarding every aspect of our children's mental, spiritual, and physical health, it just feels too overwhelming. Now, I'd like to sit here and tell you one solution is to go to the nearest drain and drop your smartphone down it and encourage your children to do the same. But I probably would be placing the bar too high on that one. Another solution might be to purchase a small island and move our family as far away from it all as possible. Well, unfortunately, that's not an option for most of us. No, the solution starts in the real world, and it starts right at home. Our teenagers, our young people, move in a culture promoting distorted ideals, and they need our homes to be counterpoints to that influence, places that celebrate beauty and goodness and truth. And this mission to create a strong family culture requires intentionality. It requires effort, a deliberate focus on cultivating virtue within our homes. And it begins, as I've said so often, with us as their examples. If we show lukewarm commitment in all these key areas, including the use of technology and the way we use our smartphones, well, we shouldn't be surprised when our children end up even colder, perhaps freezing. Our way of life must be joyful and attractive. Our children need to see that living by these values brings happiness. They shouldn't see cranky parents exhausted by life, but parents who embody cheerfulness and positivity. They need to see that following these values works, that mum and dad come home from work smiling, but not defeated. Day after day, year after year, yes, this might seem like a heroic ask, but it's vital. And that means quality family time, a focus on service, respectful communication, connecting with like-minded families, but also it means helping to shape our children's attitudes to important things like the use of technology and how they spend their time. And of course, creating this positive, values-driven cultural environment includes helping our young people, as I say, develop a healthier relationship with things like technology. And it's important that they understand how their smartphones might be affecting their ability to focus and think deeply. Remember last week I talked about the work of Nicholas Carr and how smartphone addiction rewires the brain. Discussing some of these points will be a great starting point to shape our children's attitudes to these things. You know, talk to them about the great harm that's being caused by deepfake technologies and how these are distorting truth and reality. You know, this is where deep AI is being used to create fake voices, images, videos, conversations. You know, the fake content is so realistic. I heard about the story of a mum in the US who received a fake kidnapping call that used her daughter's AI-generated voice. How scary that must have been for this mother. You know, fake Tom Hanks was shown in a full commercial selling dental insurance. You know, it's almost impossible to tell the difference at first glance. So have a conversation with your children about risks and the consequences. You know, you're not waving a disappointed Generation X or millennial finger at AI. It's your responsibility to call these things out as primary educators, to help your children set limits. And I know this is deeply unpopular, but it's doable. God has given you the grace to be able to guide your children in this way. And the most effective way of setting these limits is to set up a strong we family culture. So limits and boundaries that we all adhere to. Not just the children, but mum and dad too, when it comes to the use of technology and how we spend our time. I've mentioned in the past using, especially when children are younger, so that you develop that culture, software like Covenant Eyes to explicit text and pornography on the screen. Go to websites like Protect Young Eyes, where their posts are full of ideas about how to start conversations with your children about these things. I mentioned last week about those phone-free zones. Open, honest conversations are key. You know, rather than dictating rules, you know, hold young people accountable as they grow up, as they mature. Sit down with your children and discuss the kind of digital environment you want to create in your home. You know, develop, as I say, this kind of we culture, this collective charter, and then set the guidelines and accountability measures appropriately. Also, consider breaking the smartphone's hold on information and entertainment and news sourcing. Perhaps instead of relying solely on your phone for news and communication and social media, you know, diversify. This may not be for everybody, but you might consider getting a newspaper subscription in print for more focused reading time, or using only your laptop for emails. Perhaps you might want to explore setting up a minimalist phone app on your phone to limit distracting functionality and to encourage your older teenagers to do the same. Diversify, try different things out, but try to break that monopoly that the smartphone has on all the various sources of information. By working collaboratively in our families, we can establish boundaries and expectations that everybody understands and respects, and begin that early, begin that conversation when the children are young. And guide your children to consider whether their actions generally align with the values they hold, because this collaborative approach goes beyond just technology use. As a Roman teacher wisely said, a young man must be overcome by reason, not by force. Now, this isn't about winning arguments all the time, but about fostering critical thinking within our children. Remember, if young people haven't fully internalized those values, they'll lack the foundation to resist negative influences when they're on their own. So explain your reasoning. Be mindful of endless arguments. And instead, teach them to think critically. Give them the tools for good decision making. And allow them to learn from the consequences of their choices, obviously whenever safely possible. And I mentioned last week, collude with other parents. This probably would be a good use of WhatsApp. If everyone agreed to equip their children with an old school Nokia brick until a certain age, this could go a long way, at least, to helping children of a certain age. But perhaps the most effective way of building a strong parent child relationship is to do so without words. Give your children plenty of affection. The heart of a parent is often more important than the strategies for parenting. And I keep reminding parents of this because they feel that if I can just share one or two bulletproof strategies, then everything will be easy. No, the heart of a parent is much more important than any strategies I can offer you. Your children today live in a ruthless world. Internet bullying, gossip, sarcasm, and all the social pressures a teen may experience leave them thirsting for praise and affirmation. And if they feel ignored or rejected at home, you know, this only primes them for illicit forms of affection and false love elsewhere. Building a truly loving home environment starts with that affection. Without a strong connection, you risk being excluded from your teenager's heart, unaware of their deepest worries and hopes. So praise your children at least twice as often as you criticize them. And as difficult as it might be, do your best always to express love in your face, even when you have to correct them. As one priest said in a 5-second homily, you know, negative humor is from the pits of hell. Keep it there. Married couples know that sarcasm erodes intimacy. The same is true of parent-child relationships. Your children need to hear often that you love them. You know, I'm proud of you. Just like my father used to write in those handwritten notes. And teens also need physical affection. They may cringe and squirm whenever you come near them, but don't stop hugging them and kissing them. Finally, a short announcement. As from June, my ProParent show will transition from weekly to monthly to better accommodate the growing professional commitments I have as an educational consultant. So I hope you will all understand. I want to thank Father Toby for his understanding in particular and his support as I make this transition. So I look forward to continuing our journey through parenthood together, even if it's at a slightly slower pace, as I say, monthly. And the next show, as I mentioned, will be in June. And the team at Radio Maria will notify you of the scheduling in due course. I continue to keep everyone at Radio Maria in my prayers, most especially you, our valued listeners. And please keep me in your prayers also. That's all from me, Chido Candia, on today's episode of ProParent, the programme that promotes confident parenting. Tune in, same time, next month. Goodbye.
You've been listening to a podcast from Radio Maria. If you enjoy these programs, please consider becoming one of our monthly donors. All you need to do is visit www.radiomariaengland.uk and click on the Support Us tab for various options. We rely entirely on donations, so thank you to all our listeners for their generous support.